Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here with another Brains Behind It. We are actually talking about tahini today. Of all things, you know how much I love, I just love food and the psychology behind food and the marketing of food and everything. I'm talking to Shelby, I want to say Zittleman, is that right?
Zeitelman.
Oh, I could have gone one direction. I went the other direction. You know, we're going to talk to you today. Thank you very much for being on the show, by the way.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So what I really get into is kind of the psychology behind a lot of products. You can certainly promote your product here, but what this is aimed for are people who are interested in running your own business or just curious about how things work. What I really, really hope that I'm doing, which I found in this show a lot, is kind of debunking the myth that success is based on luck. It's a a lot of hard work, a lot of trial and error, and then on top of that, maybe a little bit of luck, but certainly you have to have all that other stuff. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit before we get into about your product. You have a very, very high quality, organic, delicious tahini paste. I want to talk to you about what is the mindset that goes into somebody who even starts a startup. What did you start with? Have you done businesses before? Did you have a parent that gave you a bunch of money? Did you just say, hey, I like tahini, and you start a business one day? What's the mindset that goes into this?
So perhaps a combination of all of the above.
Okay.
I studied entrepreneurial management in college. I went to school for business, really as inspired by my parents. Both of my parents were entrepreneurs themselves. Their parents were entrepreneurs, so I guess you could say entrepreneurship was in my blood. And I was just fascinated with the process of taking an idea and turning that into, one, a business plan, and then evaluating that business plan and seeing if there's actually a business opportunity there. So that's what I studied in school, and the first couple of jobs actually led me to Israel. And while I was in Israel, my middle sister had moved there. She started dating her now husband, Omri, who has been in the tahini and sesame industry for a dozen years. And so the last piece of this is fell in love with tahini and thought, could we start a business? So here we are.
And I didn't even do the obvious pun of open sesame, right? When we first started, I should have been open sesame. That's a terrible, terrible joke.
And it's okay. We use it all the time.
It's probably politically incorrect at this point too, right?
Who knows?
Okay. So for people who don't know, who haven't, stretched their palate a little bit, tahini is a sesame paste. So if people think of sesame seeds, it's all ground up into a paste. It's kind of like peanut butter, but with tahini seeds, has a delicious nutty flavor. You can use it in it's not just for bread. Oftentimes it's eaten with a lot of Mediterranean food, a lot of Middle Eastern food.
Hummus.
Yeah, and it's a big ingredient in hummus as well.
Right.
Okay, so clearly there is an international market for tahini, right? And you came from a background. Do you think that that entrepreneurial spirit, do you think that's born or is that made? Because most of the people I have on the show, I got to give you some background here, including myself, basically just feel like they were born into being an entrepreneur. I did not know a single person. I had one uncle actually who was a business person who everybody in my family seemed to like say bad stuff about. Sorry, uncle. I won't say the name. But that was the thing. And I think a lot of people who are quote unquote jobbers who have a Joe job. I came from a blue collar family. My family was very poor growing up. I know what that feels like. I think a lot of times they saw people who run a business as somehow evil or whatever, And there was a lot of that sort of neo-Marxist idiot rhetoric. Right. So I wanted to ask you about this because I've met most people who just kind of started their business in spite of that hate. They weren't really pushed or encouraged. So I want to know, what's it like to grow up in a family of entrepreneurs? And did you feel like this was something you wanted to do, or were you kind of nudged into this?
I was always curious about it and what would be that opportunity. I can't say that I was ever looking to necessarily start my own business, but being surrounded by other entrepreneurs, helping them with their business plans, that those were the jobs that I had before I started Soom Foods. I guess I was always thinking, like, what might that be? I get ideas in my head literally every week. I was just joking about this with a friend. We were having coffee. He said, there's a business idea. I said, I cannot focus on that right now. I need to put my head down and continue to build Soom Foods. So I do think that part of it was in me just because it became second nature, right? Like around the dinner table, we're talking about business. My sisters and I were at our parents' offices all the time supporting them by packing up boxes or, you know, sending out mailings or whatever we could do.
So it was normalized for you. You grew up in it as normalized. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And it probably gave you a great leg up to have somebody you could go to when something's going on and you realize that, you know, some of the stress is normal. That's fantastic. Okay, so you start your own business and you get into it. What's your biggest crisis that you ever encountered?
There's so many. We joke about it when we write the book that there will be a whole.
That's why I always say in these interviews, I never say, you know, have you ever had a crisis or something? Oh, I say, what's the biggest one? And usually I get the exact same response. I think I had one person who said, we haven't really had a crisis yet, but they were in business for like 6 months or something. And they, you know, they did a Kickstarter and just boom. So they haven't had their crisis yet. Right.
Right. There are a few. I think the biggest one for us was actually a bad hiring decision, which ended up in, it resulted in a lot of other crises.
Did you get into a lawsuit or something?
There was a little bit of a legal concern, but just on the operations of our business, we honestly didn't have the confidence that we had what it took to grow this business because we had no prior industry experience. Food and beverage is its own crazy world, and none of us came from that background. I did not come from that background, and so we thought that we needed somebody to help us kind of accelerate the learning curve there, and he was just not the right person. He spent a lot of money on new products that did not perform well. Ultimately, we had to pull those from the refrigerator. He also brought on some other folks and spent, long story short, it just... The investment in that individual then resulted in a lot of other things.
So entrepreneurs kind of fit into two categories when it comes to a product. They come from the industry that they're in, or they come from outside and they're kind of disrupting the industry that they're in. And I've encountered both. I lately in the startups, I don't know if this is indicative of anything, but I found more people are coming from the outside disrupting industry than starting up in the industry. I think that has a lot to do with technology. People like, you know, like there's a technology in one of my interviews that is basically doing all the transactions for pot, the cannabis industry, for example. So they're taking like technology point of sale stuff, but applying it to cannabis because the regulations are kind of murky and they need like a custom fit. That sort of thing. I see a lot of stuff here. So you recognize that you had a deficiency. You needed someone with more experience because you're kind of going the traditional route. You're trying to get, you know, jars on shelves. But it sounded like who you hired is used to working for a much larger company, not being part of a startup. So they're used to having a huge budget, having a bunch of product lines and kind of splurging a little bit. And that might have been, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, find a lesson for the viewers. How would you suggest you avoid something like that in the future?
I think, first of all, just confidence, right? Like we had a really strong strategy and we knew what we were focused on. As soon as we hired him, he kind of, you know, took us in a different direction.
So know your vision, right?
Correct.
Without a vision, the people perish. I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah. Something like that. I think the other thing, we very much believe in like test and iterate. So I think there could have been a way for us to work with this individual before we went all into the relationship, especially for someone, he was the person we paid the most. We gave him equity in the company. You know, like we made a lot of decisions that I think we could have tested if we had taken another couple of months to really figure out what the nature of our working relationship would be.
Well, that's actually a big important point. One of the things I've noticed in my business, I'd say good half of my, not half, maybe a quarter at this point, but at one point, at least half of my business came from referrals, lead sources, other people, right? And I've had to enter into some contracts, I've had to break some contracts, and it's been very, very tough. Some people were very close friends, but I disagreed on something, and I knew I could kind of see a few months down the road, it was going to cost me much more than I was prepared to spend. Mm-hmm. So I would say that kind of one of the lessons to learn here is you're always negotiating, you know, try to get the best deal. If he wants to come on board, maybe, you know, realize that you are like, have that confidence. You are pretty shiny. You are this amazing thing that he wants to be a part of. So he's going to have to work a little harder, maybe take a little less of a cut to earn it instead of mm-hmm. just assume that other people, yeah. You know, that's funny because there's a lot of entrepreneurs who don't really give themselves their own due, you know? There's so much of a struggle. They think, you know, they look around on Facebook and they see people, you know, on yachts yeah. and buying fancy cars and they think, oh, everyone else is, it must know how to do this and it's so easy for everyone else and I'm struggling, so I must suck. And the fact is, you know, if you're struggling, that means you're doing it right, you know? That's, if you're, I often say it's better to be busy than broke, you know? And if you're busy, if you're struggling, if you're working hard at this, then that's a good sign. All right. So let's get into marketing. How the heck do you market tahini? Do you want to show us some of your products, by the way? You brought some jars over.
Yes. So this is our tahini.
Nice.
Premium tahini made from Ethiopian sesame seeds. Really some of the best in the world for making tahini. Honestly, our marketing decision has turned into our primary revenue maker. When we started the business, we knew that we had a long road ahead of us because in America, not many people know tahini. Mm. What is it? How is it made? Like the education was just so instrumental. So we decided that if we looked towards culinary influencers, meaning mm-hmm. chefs, celebrity chefs, you know, the Food Network is 24 hours a day now, right? We live in this yep. culture where we want to learn from the masters. If we could sell to chefs, that they would help us to educate the consumer about tahini. So we've been working with restaurateurs, restaurants, fast casual chains across the country to help us promote tahini, how amazing it is, how good it is for you. And what ended up happening was that we're making 80% of our revenue actually from the food service side of our business. So,
oh, fantastic. So it's been used in the restaurants and then that translates to consumer.
Exactly. So our marketing hypothesis actually turned into a pretty decent business decision.
I've got an idea for you. I've been kind of writing a book in the background on different brain hacks used in dieting. I've, you know, tried out a whole bunch and kind of separating fact from fiction and I lost a bunch of weight and I'm actually working on being like shredded. I want to get down to 12% nice. Body fat. I'm at
good like, for
it,
you.
I'm at like 21 now, I think it is, or 20, something like that.
No
but
idea.
Anyways,
where I am.
I'm looking okay for a 44-year-old.
Great, Dave.
Thank you. So my point is that there's one thing that I've been doing lately that I think you could use as a marketing hook. And I'd love to do this pitch. I don't know if you do much towards bloggers and like the blogosphere, but if you get a lot of people talking about the same thing online, it really trends and really helps your SEO. But anyway, feel free if you can use this, if you can, you know, if not, then that's fine too. I had horrible cravings when I'm trying to diet and I'm trying to fast, horrible cravings for chocolate, horrible cravings for especially like cereal and things like that. And a friend of mine who's a personal trainer, she's fantastic. She told me to start eating a handful of nuts every day. And I tried varying it up a little bit. And also nut butter. I've tried tahini on just, I have like say chicken or rice or something like a stir fry, really healthy, but I'll have a little bit of tahini in there or a little bit of nut butter or something in with it. Mm-hmm. And essentially the theory is why it really does work. It dramatically reduces your cravings for junk food. The theory is that you're only craving junk food because your body is craving those good, healthy fats. Mm-hmm. It's craving the, you know, yeah, like really healthy, good for you fats because you're trimming fat, right? But the thing is, those good fats, they don't necessarily turn into a spare tire. You know, they don't go around your waist, but the chocolate bar does, right? So mm-hmm. your brain doesn't really differentiate that. Cravings aren't like super precise. They're not a bullet. So the mm-hmm. craving just says, I want junk food. I want junk food. What it really wants is that healthy fat. So you have a little bit of the healthy fats and then it satisfies that need. And the mm-hmm. cravings all but disappear. I can't say I don't have any junk food, but I don't have those cravings that I used to. And I think that there's a lot of science behind it. You know, you can't make a marketing claim without some science, but I think that could be a really good hook for you as a dietary aid.
I appreciate that. And the health and wellness and overall well-being is really how we do want to position our product in the mm-hmm. future. That is what inspired us to start the business. We've ended up in this kind of foodie market to, mm-hmm. Because of the work that we've done with the chefs that we have. But yeah. I agree with you 100%. And that is where we see the brand growing. And I did just want to acknowledge that we have a chocolate tahini. Which is a guiltless indulgence because it's only three ingredients: tahini, cocoa powder, and just a smidge of pure cane powdered sugar. It's only 10 grams of sugar for 2 tablespoons. So for our health and wellness folks who do eat this, they swear by it. It kills all of those cravings and they still get, you know, the chocolate that they're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, well, I'm glad you like it. I think that the hook of getting rid of the cravings, by the way, great, great, you know, segue into the product shot. You don't need much media training from me. That's for sure.
Yeah. Better I think background that, maybe, but yeah,
there you go. We'll work on that. I think that, this craving thing in the American market, health is a tough sell, but weight loss isn't, you know?
Right.
And very often the health products that do incredibly well are mostly weight loss products. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, that can often be opposite. Things that'll help you lose weight. There's a lot of things that'll help you lose weight that are terrible for your health and your long-term benefit. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, translating it into something, well, that's the job of marketing really, is to translate the benefit into something that people already want. You know, they mm-hmm. want to lose weight and they think, tahini paste, that's really high in calorie. I'm going to avoid that. But you have, it's not, no peanuts as well. So that's a really good thing because there are a lot of people are getting rid of peanuts. You can't even use it in your kids, you know, peanut butter and jelly. You know, they can't go to school with it. Can't do it in some workplaces. So you've got that advantage. And then if you just add it to your food on a regular basis, then you're not craving sweets. You're not craving junk food as much and you'll naturally lose weight is the implication. I think if you hold people by the hand, that message will really resonate. But you've got a core business right now. So I guess the goal right now for this year would be to branch out to consumer then, huh?
Yes, actually you nailed it on the head. We are going that route this year because we have a strong foothold right now with the culinary community and we really do have a vision of tahini being, you know, a staple pantry item for the American consumer in many of the ways that you talked about, or if people just want to make the best hummus they've ever made, you know, we have a fantastic product for them.
Yeah. And also having recipes for it. I think you have a lot of different things about the recipes. I think you guys are on the right track. I just wanted to add that one little, you know, conquering the cravings, because it worked really well for me. And I think that maybe
conquer
we'll talk
the cravings. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, I am a communications guy. But maybe we'll talk afterwards. This has been a pleasure. Is there any final, going back to the business side of things, is there any advice that you would give to people in general? Or also, I mean, goes without saying, you're a female entrepreneur. So if you want to aim it at women specifically, that's cool too. But any advice you'd give for anybody who wants to be in your position and they're not right now, what do they have to watch out for? What do they have to do?
I think one of the things that, you know, that I'm proud of with our business is that we didn't have this bright, shiny business plan before we rolled out. Like, we knew that we had a great product. We knew that we had a great brand and a strong vision. And we have been testing and iterating over the past 5 years. We've changed our packaging 5 times. We've changed, pieces of our logistical puzzle over and over. And if anybody is interested in starting their own business, you know, figure out what it would take to just prove that initial concept, take that learning, and then continue to build upon it. It's worked for us so far. And so I think that that's a way for people to really evaluate, do you have what it takes, and can you get past some of those, you know, initial crises and obstacles that are bound to happen without, you know, it's just a little bit of a hedging of the bet, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's brilliant. I think essentially what you're saying is that no plan survives contact with the enemy. So you have to, you know, stay nimble and stay focused.
And test it in the real world, because on paper, looks great.
That's very true. All right. So tell us how we can get your foods. It's Soom Foods, S-O-O-M Foods.
Yes, S-O-O-M as in Mary, foods with an S.com. We sell online anywhere in the continental U.S., either through SoomFoods.com or on Amazon. And we also have a list of our retail outlets on our website as well.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. You're definitely a brains behind it. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.